today I'm really excited to be in Dunster with Pete Mount Stephen. And Pete used to live in Box and has moved away, which makes him eligible for this project. So I'm really excited to be here today. And I'm going to ask Pete the usual questions and some other ones. And we are enjoying a lovely cup of tea. I have mine in a Cheshire Cat mug, which is brilliant. And I've brought some OT chocolate chippy things to eat as well. So if you hear munching, that's what I'm munching. So Pete has set out a grand example of things that are his favourite things that begin with tea. So I think we could start with there while I drink tea.
Right, well, there were three things, and there's a certain amount of foolishness to it. Of course, I've got a 12-string guitar. Guitar's quite a big part of my life, and guitar, sadly, does not begin with tea, so I had to find one that did. There's a tin of beer, which I must admit I am fond of the occasional pint. And the actual favourite thing beginning with tea, without a shadow of doubt, is my lovely terrier, Min. So the real one is tea for terrier.
Tea for terrier, that's really good. Mm. So one of the other questions, which is a standard question, is where did we first meet?
We met at church in Box. That was where we met. And when I first toddled along to... I think that was where we first met.
I think it probably was.
When I first toddled along to 8 o'clock service at Box.
So why are you a big fan of 8 o'clock?
Well, this is going to... I think this is probably going to impact on conversations further down this interview. Mm-hmm. I rather like the sparse nature of the congregation. I rather like the anonymity, because it isn't that. It's not being sort of slinking around about going to church. It isn't that. It's I find it a very personal thing, and I like my personal space in church. I don't want to be part of a crowd jumping up and down and hugging each other. Right. And 8 o'clock service is the very place to do that, because there have been occasions when I have been the congregation. Regrettably, that is also the case at the main service in Dunster, where there's about three of us, and I think I'm the youngest by about 40 years.
So I was going to ask you about that, about what the church is like here in Dunster that you've been to. Are you going along? Do they have 8 o'clock? Do they have a service every week? Because it's a tiny village.
They don't have... Well, they do have a service every week. They don't have a communion service every week, and I do like to make my communion. So it's... I kind of oscillate between going to St George's in Dunster and to the church in Carhampton, which is just down the way. That way I can go to the communion service. There's very much a sense of local character here. There's a very self-conscious kind of rurality, mm-hmm, to Dunster. Very self-conscious. And it's quite subtle sometimes, and it's right in your face at other times, mm-hmm, but you know, it doesn't exactly say on the orders of service, by the way, we are in the country. I don't know if you knew that, mm, but it is a bit like that. And again, it isn't a positive or a negative. It's not a value laden thing at all. It's just different. Mm. I'm ashamed. No, I'm not ashamed. I'm slightly embarrassed to say that I love sermons.
I think I should say yay to that, shouldn't I, as a vicar?
Well, I like it because I like talking, and I like public speaking, mm-hmm, and I love ideas, and I like people to kind of... I suppose I'm not going to sit there with a scorecard or anything during a sermon. I'm as crass as that. But I do really enjoy it if somebody's thought about it and it's got a few different and quite tricky concepts going through it, and it challenges you a little bit. I like that. That, I think it would be fair to say, has not been the case thus far.
Out of my own pride, do I need to say in Dunster?
In Dunster.
Okay. few. I like to give people difficult
no,
things
you do.
To think about.
No, you do. You do. No, your sermons and Philip's before that at in St Mary's were they were very challenging.
I remember one morning when I'd thought about what I was going to preach about. I hadn't necessarily written it down. I don't, because the 8 o'clock's often a pricey of the service coming. I often now don't write notes for it as separate notes. But I remember once thinking, oh, Pete's here, I hope this is okay.
Really?
Yeah, it was just because it was going to hit, I thought it was going to hit some things that were a bit tender
for
you at the time.
I remember saying to you on the way out, something along the lines of, well, you know, that was one for me, wasn't it?
And I had no idea that you would be there that particular day or whether you might be in Great Chalford.
It was very pertinent.
Mm. And I think we have to accept and pray that God has his hand on sermons, really.
And that also has been my experience, even when I've sort of sat there. I'm at some pains to say, look, I don't sit there thinking, oh, God, you know, come on, wake up a bit. I don't do that at all. But I suppose I just get a bit bored if it's not really asking me to think.
Mm.
And if it strikes me as being, I suppose, a little bit on the lazy side in terms of how much has gone into the thought about it. But very, very often it's just so pertinent. And part of that, I'm sure, is the kind of universal, kind of cosmic nature of the subject matter.
Mm.
But part of it is greater than that. There is definitely a sense of kaboo going on.
I particularly felt that morning.
I
got to the point of actually thinking, am I going to say this or am I going to say something else? And then I thought,
well,
I've
come and had a conversation with you briefly. Mm. It was kind of cut off because you had something else to do or something like that. But we had a conversation before then, and it was very, very pertinent.
The quote that I'm thinking about on this journey is from a Telegraph article a while ago, which said, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping. I wondered what your response to that statement would be.
I don't think it's dying. Or at least I don't think it needs to. Mm-hmm. I think it has a kind of sleep that has a medical dimension and could prove terminal.
Nice.
I mean, I think it's the, was it Carey who said that it'd be gone in a generation?
Mm.
I don't think that's the case. And I think I'm, in terms of my own, my mind is very divided in terms of my response to this, because on one hand, as I've already alluded, my own personal enjoyment of church is all the reasons why numbers are going down.
Mm.
I'm the problem. Or at least, I like the problem. But I'm enough of a Christian to want it not to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So what I think the church needs to do, just as a straight sort of no-brainer kind of intellectual thing, is not what I would want personally. I love about church is, and I have loved this consistently through wherever my actual personal faith position has appeared to be at any time, is the atmosphere, the ritual, the drama, the sense of heritage, mm-hmm. legacy, the shoulders of giants, the music, the old music particularly, all the things that are likely to appear to be irrelevant and turn off, all the reasons why Islam is growing so quickly. Are the reasons why I would say the church that I love is dwindling. Because it doesn't shove itself up anybody's nose. It does say, don't really mind if you don't come, that's fine. And that's not the way forward.
So in Box, we have this really mixed economy of church. And I think you slotted into your part where you felt at home and where we've started trying to use this phrase about where people are finding that they're spiritually fed. And we need to provide spiritual food for people in a diverse culture, in a diverse way. But this last year was the first year that numerically our other services of worship, other than our main Sunday services, there were more attendances at what we did otherwise than on a Sunday morning. And I think we're still trying to work out what that means for us. And the range is huge. So we have Book of Common Prayer services at 8 o'clock at Box and at Chapel Plaster, of course, once a month, which is essentially a museum with a...
I love that.
...with ancient...
I love the Chapel Plaster ones.
And it's hard because somebody said to me not long after I started in Box, I said, well, basically Chapel Plaster is a museum where we have worship. And somebody said to me, if you'd started worship in a museum, everyone would be really excited about it. But because you've had the museum for 100 years already, people think it's not a good thing to do. And I've always kept that as an encouragement, really, because we still have worship there in this building, which has a huge history and a huge story of redemption. I mean, it's been on its way past a high woman's hideout as part of its journey, this building. And it is kind of, it is a museum, essentially. So from that, we go all the way through the kind of messy church, sort of standard, more standard services, messy church, the filling station, although I didn't include the filling station in those numbers, the kind of evangelical charismatic worship at the probably extreme end. And the things that we do with families. Whatever I do, I cannot get families to come to church on a Sunday morning.
That's
nothing I can do. And that wasn't the case when I first moved to Box, because we had a family service hump of people who came to breakfast on Sunday mornings, and that has disappeared. But we've started this new thing on Wednesday afternoons in conjunction with the Methodists, and people are coming to that.
Is that the filling station thing?
No, it's called Grace. It's basically a messy church.
Vaguely remember, yeah.
So it's quite new. And we've got Heart of a Muddler, which is a similar, very family-focused way of worshipping. I wanted to ask you some questions about education and primary schools, and kind of feeling that perhaps people in England get to the end of a primary school, particularly a church primary school, and then they have no faith development beyond the age of 11. And I wonder whether you think that's true, whether what we've done up to 11 in a church primary school is enough.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I think there is some truth in that. Secondary schools with a foundation are rare. So my daughter went to St Mary Redcliffe, and she received the same level of witness and input from the organisation, the culture that she was in, throughout her secondary years, as she did her primary years. But that's incredibly unusual. So yes, I suppose that's true. I mean, I think I profoundly believe that so much of what we do by the time, or we have mastered by the time we are 11, is us forever. The analogy that I normally use is, you know, a baking analogy, and that anybody probably really after about 8 is just icing the cake. The cake's baked.
Mm-hmm.
It's done. For better or worse. That's a pretty bleak thing to say, and I'm not saying that if you have the most appalling experiences until you're 8 years old, there's no way back. I'm saying it's one hell of a road. And that road will probably never be as smooth as it could have been had one's experiences been different. So I think the question really in terms of spiritual nourishment for the next generation or people coming, you know, from birth is the question about what happens from birth to 5. Because, you know, that is a gap. And more happens then than will happen in the rest of your life.
Mm.
Significantly more, massively, substantially more. I mean, there's some statistic about 80% of all you'll ever know you've learnt by the time you're 5. So that whole business of the formation of personality, of deeply held attitudes and so on, of course, they're shaped by one's entire life. But that's where the foundations go down. And I think, you know, my personal life, even when I have been, and I have had large periods of my adult life where I have been completely without faith,
mm-hmm.
but have still religiously gone to church
mm-hmm.
and said things I don't believe, but got a huge amount from a link to something that's always been me. I couldn't not go.
I think it's really interesting what you said. When we were, when our daughter, our eldest daughter was born, we had her baptised with water, and we had some more evangelical friends who said, "Why are you making that decision for her?
Mm-hmm.
And as she was maybe 8 weeks old, and she'd been in church since she was 10 days old, and so she'd been part of that community. And I just, in one of those moments where I just say something afterwards, think, wow, that was profound. I said, she already knows more about living in a community of faith than some people will ever know. And she was 12 weeks old.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true.
And I thought, gosh, actually, I really do believe that.
That is profound. And I'm certain that's true. I mean, we became grandparents in October. Little George has appeared on the planet. And watching that from what is a more considered perspective than the perspective that I had when my little girl was that age. It's just dramatic. It's dramatic. It's like having a black hole in the room. It's just kind of sucking the wallpaper off the walls. He's so alert.
Mm.
And he's happening. Happening is his middle name at the moment. Everything is about him happening. Happening to him, happening in him, happening from him. And the quality and diversity of his experience now, I don't think it can be overstated.
Mm.
So I think that's my view would be, if the purpose of the church is to grow its numbers, if that's the purpose, then I think very young, and the work that you've been doing, for example, with families and making messy church, that sort of thing, making the church a place where families don't feel intimidated, they don't feel that this is irrelevant or fusty or some kind of elitist club, the language isn't difficult, the music isn't boring or challenging or dull or Victorian or something, that kind of thing, you know. So, you know, the kind of One Direction services, I think, are a great, I mean, that's the way forward, there's no doubt about that.
Favourite type of tea?
Oh, Yorkshire.
Yorkshire tea.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to say thank you for having me for my cup of tea. Thank you very much, Pete.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure.